Good morning.
Okay. Governor, first of all, thanks for showing up. We always appreciate that. And if you can make some news, that's better because we get our names in the paper along with yours.
I'll make news. I'll make up the news just to get your name in the paper.
First of all, how's your back? I understand that, you know, like me, you may have a little back problem, and like your dad. Your dad used to leave butt boards wherever he went with the Empire State emblem on them. But how's yours?
It is genetic, and you know, when I'm in good shape, Alan, it's fine. But it's sort of the canary in the coal mine for me on what kind of shape I'm in.
Yeah, me too.
Am I sleeping? Am I exercising? But it's been hot and cold. You know, we're at the end of legislative session, so the stress is high. You're not sleeping, and that's when it's been problematic. But it's not. It's just instead of a pain in the neck, it's a pain in the back.
Yeah, your father once told me about John Sarno. I was complaining about my back, Dr. Sarno on backs. And he said, you know, Sarno's philosophy was that the back is the great repository of all emotional distress. And if you solve that problem, then, you know, your back's going to get better. I argued with him about it on the air, but I don't think he listened. So
he often argued and often didn't listen. And Sarno was right. You know, the stress goes back, the muscles get tight. If you can end the stress, you'll be fine. Yeah. But if you can end the stress, you know, you'll be fine across the board. That's the problem.
So I said to him, "What if you, you know, what if you're, you know, what if your wife is your problem?" He said, "Quote, you know what to do." Well, I love my wife, and I have a bad back. Anyway, okay, tell us about the rent control stuff. You know, I think my position is nobody cares more about rent any issue than rent control because it's your whole income. We're going to have it, rent regulations. There's a question of whether the Senate will pass them and mandate that everybody has them around the state. What's happening on that?
Look, first for me, from a substantive level, you know, I've done housing all my life, as you know.
Yes.
I started in my 20s building low-income housing, homeless housing. I was the HUD secretary. We brought more affordable housing to this nation than any time in history. As governor, I've invested more than any governor in history in affordable housing. It's all political right now. And since we're down to the short strokes here, the assembly put forth a very aggressive bill. I don't believe the Senate can pass politically the assembly bill for the political reasons we discussed. I will sign any bill the assembly passes or any bill the Senate passes. And what I have said is, look, the Senate has to pass a bill. Stop talking, stop pontificating, pass a bill. If they don't pass the bill by tomorrow, Alan, then the rent laws will expire. And then you want to hear an explosion in this state. You let those rent control laws expire. So the Senate must pass a bill by tomorrow. I have told them the assembly will pass whatever bill they pass. And I will sign whatever bill they pass. The question is, what is the most aggressive bill the Senate can pass? And what they're running into is the difference between politics and government and the majority and the minority. You know, when you're running for office, you promise everything, right? And when you're in the minority, you can say anything because it doesn't matter because you're not in the majority.
So
they're now in the majority.
So just to be clear, I think I heard something there. I want to make sure I heard it right. Speaker Hastie has assured you that whatever the Senate Democrats do, they'll do. The assembly will do.
Yes, because the assembly bill is more aggressive than any bill the Senate can pass. He put forth a 8-point bill or a 9-point bill with tenant protections. I don't believe the Senate, given their representation, not just New York City, Long Island, upstate, etc., can pass as aggressive a bill. They don't want to admit it, but I don't think they can. So the ball now shifts into their court. Let the Senate pass the best bill they can, and the assembly will pass it, and I will sign it. But to tomorrow is the deadline to pass the bill.
They have to introduce the bill tomorrow.
But before the Saturday expiration.
But you could do a message of necessity, couldn't you?
I don't believe a message of necessity is justified here because there is no necessity. You know, necessity means in the public interest you waive the three-day waiting period on the bill. And it's a little bit of an antiquated rule, but we've had months we've been talking about this. There is no urgency. They could have done this last week or the week before, and they have today, and they have tomorrow, because the laws expire Saturday.
Okay, but just to be clear, are you telling me that you will not offer a message of necessity if it's warranted in order to clear this mess up?
Oh, you're getting very demonstrative now and tad aggressive.
That's what I do.
Okay.
And then
I'm on the defensive because I sense your aggressiveness.
I want to get in the newspapers. What are you saying?
I'm saying there is no need for a message of necessity. Pass the bill, introduce it tomorrow, and get it done before the law expires on Saturday.
But yes or no, if confronted with a law expiring and they haven't done it within the three-day waiting period, will you offer a message of necessity?
They haven't done it just because they're delinquent and they don't want the political consequences of their vote? No, I won't do it.
Now, let's go on to something else.
Did I make news for you?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Okay, so thank you.
Governor says, no, I won't do it. All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about the gerrymandering. I know I've been teaching this stuff for a lot of time, but I must say I don't quite understand it. Other states, like Texas, I remember that. When the Republicans got control of both houses, they didn't wait till the census. They just reformed all the districts and kicked a lot of Democrats out. Why can't the Democrats do that to the Republicans in New York State now instead of having to wait, which you mentioned the other day?
We have, under our current law, an independent commission that we set up a couple of years ago. With a prescribed voting basis. I can check, because you're very smart and you know more than I know on a number of issues.
You know that's not true.
I don't believe they can change it now in time to make a difference, but I will check.
That's an interesting question because, obviously, the gerrymander... If the Democrats play their hands right now, the ones who are worried about losing their jobs, Westchester, Long Island, upstate, these are Democrats, blue Democrats who won. If the gerrymander, once the gerrymander comes in, and the Democrats change the districts around, those guys won't lose, but now they might.
Yes. Yes, and the politics of the Senate is a double whammy. You have certain members afraid of Republican attacks, and you have other members afraid of the progressive attacks. You know, the New York City members, they go home. They didn't pass marijuana. They didn't pass driver's licenses. They didn't pass the rent bill that the advocates wanted. They didn't pass women's rights. They didn't pass LGBTQ rights. They're going to have challenges from the progressive left that says you promised all these things and you didn't do it. That's the tension in the Senate. The Long Island, Hudson Valley, upstate, who are afraid of a general challenge, and the New York City, who are afraid of an aggressive primary challenge. Mm. And that's why you see, like on this rent bill, all sorts of different messages. And they're reluctant to actually take the vote because that then codifies where they are.
Okay, I want to ask you about the Manhattan. I was fascinated by the helicopter crash the other day. There was it took a lot of people a long time to get to the site. Now, you're a politician. You got to the site right away. Mayor de Blasio took a couple of hours, I believe, to get there. How did that work? How do you find out about those things?
Well, that's interesting. You know, by the way, Yesterday was the trip that I was thinking of making you come on.
Oh, yeah,
to
yeah.
Get you out of the station and expose you. Because we also did a Lake Ontario visit, and we did a press conference with the LGBTQ. But emergency management is important, Doctor. And just to talk about it really for a second, because it's going to be more and more important as time goes on. This extreme weather is real. These security incidents are real. Back in my father's day, the only emergency they really dealt with was a heavy snowfall, and the big question was, do you close the throughway or not?
No. Somebody tried to blow up the Twin Towers when your dad was there.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. There was an attack on the Twin Towers. But now it's almost a weekly occurrence, right, between weather and security issues. I learned about this actually when I was in the federal government. When you're in the president's cabinet, technically you're in the line of succession of the presidency. So they give you the briefing if you were to become president. They bring you down into the bunker and they show you where all the armaments are. And it's a really frightening, really reality-based of how this world could devolve. The quote-unquote designated survivor, when a cabinet member sits out during the State of the Union, which I did several times, they then give you a refresher briefing in the bunker.
That's funny.
And how people handle an emergency, I think, is a real serious question for elected officials. My instinct is to get to the site immediately. Rather than sit in a bunker or sit in an office and get reports of what's going on, I like to be on site.
Yeah, but is that a criticism? Shartak asked the governor, is that a criticism of Mayor de Blasio?
No. Different officials do it differently. Many go to a incident management center and get reports and coordinate from there. I've done that on occasion also when it's a statewide situation and it's not site-specific. But when it's site-specific, my druthers and my preference is to show up. Why? First of all, you get the information firsthand. Life is still a game of communication. And this one said that, this one said to this one. The first report we got yesterday was from I was at a press conference, and a reporter said to me, did you hear about the small plane that crashed into a building in Manhattan? My heart almost stopped beating in my chest. You know, I think New Yorkers have a form of PTSD who lived through 9/11, and that's immediately where I went. But even the best trained emergency responders, it's still a game of communication. This one said to this commander, said to this commander, and then so being on site, you get the information firsthand. I also believe when it's a serious situation, people are glued to their TV, like yesterday, is this a terrorist attack? They want to hear from someone in authority, and I believe that's what part of the governor's job is.
Is there part of the mayor's? Well, then isn't it part of the mayor's job?
Yes. Okay. I don't know what the mayor was. First, I don't know what his protocol is, and I can't speak for him yesterday.
He may have been working out. He may have had another job. I wanted to ask you, from the Department of Good News and Bad News, the Siena poll is out, and it shows that you're doing a good job. People like you. But they don't want you to seek a fourth term, some news you made on this show. So I'm wondering, do you get hurt when you read something like that?
I used to get hurt. I used to get hurt when people said nasty things about me. I don't get hurt so much anymore. You reach a threshold of pain where it just doesn't hurt anymore. No, look, I think I was flattered that the popularity numbers are good in this ugly time, because it's an ugly partisan time. You know, it's red and blue and Democrat and Republican, and all Democrats are bad or all Democrats are good. So I feel good about that. The question, should he run a fourth term? You know, I don't know really what that triggers in people. Sounds like a lot of terms, four terms, sounds like a long time. But look, if you, when you say to someone, do you intend to serve in your current position? I would hope the answer is yes. If a person believes in what they're doing and has undertaken a lot of projects and wants to see them through and get things done, I would hope that they would say yes. You know, you're about to go under the knife with the doctor and you say to the doctor, you're happy with what you're doing? The doctor says, no, I'd really like to be a musician. That's where my passion lies. Right. You know, get me another doctor.
Right.
And we do have a lot of long-term projects that I want to make sure I get complete. So that is my current plan.
Okay.
You know, I just started 3 years. A lot can happen. I could drop dead.
Oh, no.
You know, who knows
Don't
what happens.
That. Don't say that. Oh, let's talk a little bit about the judge who came out yesterday and said a ban on outside income. Oh, it's on Friday, actually. For state lawmakers, you know, when they passed the pay raise, they said you can't make anything on the outside, which I thoroughly applaud. I think it's great. So now it's possible, I guess, lawmakers could get a big raise for 2020 and 2021 without a cap on outside income. What do you think of that?
Well, this is now a very important call that the legislature has to make, and it's going to be personal to them. I don't really understand the judge's ruling and the legal theory behind it. But you're right. The judge said they can get the raise this year, but they can't get the raise next year because the commission said it was precedent on a ban on outside income, and the commission can't do the ban on outside income.
And that starts next year. Is that why?
Yes.
That's the difference. Okay.
Yes. Now, the legislature has several options. They can appeal the suit and hope they win, or they can pass the ban on outside income, which would alleviate the problem. If they keep taking the raise and they don't pass the ban on outside income, then they're going to run into the Alan Chartox of the world who say, you got the raise, you were supposed to give up the outside income, and you didn't. And that's a political issue. If they pass the ban, I think that resolves the legal issue. If they appeal the lawsuit and lose, then they may not get a raise for another 3 years, which I think would make them very unhappy and which would be unfair, right? Because they hadn't had a raise in 17 years, and I thought this was fair. So it's going to be up to them because it's about them and it's very personal to them. But it's an important call because if you don't get a raise for 3 years, you're going to have a very unhappy legislature, and I think they will be treated unfairly. And my fear is they seek other positions. You know, a majority come from New York City. They can run for the New York City Council. They can make more money, and they can be home with their family. It's an important decision, but it's going to be up to the legislature.
Okay. You got rid of Michael Linton from the MTA board because you said, because sources said you thought he was too independent. What too independent? What was that about?
That's a lot of malarkey.
Hooey?
Garbage, baloney, gossip, rumors. I don't even believe Michael Linton voted on anything or said anything because he was just on the board a couple of weeks. What happened is this. The MTA, in my opinion, has serious management issues. And the U.S. attorney started an investigation. The Queens DA started an investigation. The inspector general, who's new and is phenomenal, came up with some revelations that are really startling. And they need management help and financial fraud help. We gave them a ton of money. And it's the funding, more funding does not help if you don't have good management. And the board needs good management.
But didn't you put this guy on the board?
I put him on and Fernando Ferrer, who's a star. Michael Linton, when I put him on, the need was to bring new tech firms into the MTA sphere because the MTA keeps contracting with these bad contractors who I believe they have an incestuous relationship with. And the new issue became these over the past couple of weeks. The U.S. Attorney's investigation, the Queens DA, and vandalism of time and attendance systems. So the way a coach will shift players depending on what's happening on the court, basketball, mm-hmm. and the need. Michael Linton, who's great and is from the tech world and I think could bring in new tech vendors, today the need is financial expertise, anti-fraud systems. So I switched for the state budget director, who is a financial wizard, in my opinion, and can safeguard the state money, and the Department of Financial Services commissioner, who is a former federal prosecutor and is very good on financial fraud. It had nothing to do with Fernando Ferrer or Michael Linton, who are both great. I'm going to put them on other boards. Freddie Ferrer is already on the CUNY board. Linton can be of help, and we're going to put him on another board. But they were only there a couple of weeks, and the switch was only because the facts changed. And now we were down 10 points, and we needed a strong center and a power forward. And that's what I did.
You said incestuous relationship. I was fascinated by that. You know, some of the vendors and some of the people on the board. Anything specific you want to point out?
I call it the transportation industrial complex. They contract with the same vendors, many of whom have hired former MTA personnel, despite the fact that the vendor has disappointed repeatedly. It is incestuous, and incestuous is the best word. If I had my attorney general hat on, I might raise other possibilities. But we passed a law in the state to stop it, and we said you can't contract with a contractor who's been more than 10% over budget or more than 10% late. Huh. They still want to go back to the same vendors.
Why?
That is the great question, why. They will say nobody will contract with us. I think that's a lot of baloney. They're giving out billion-dollar contracts. There are a lot of companies who will bid on a billion-dollar contract. I think it's the vendors who they have relationships with.
What kind of relationships?
I'm not saying it's necessarily nefarious. It could just be personal. It could be political pressure.
How about financial?
That would be a crime. And I wouldn't go there yet. But putting on Linda Lacewell, who's a former federal prosecutor and prosecutes financial frauds, she did the Enron case. I want that expertise on the board now.
Gotcha. Dick Gottfried wants to decriminalize sex work in New York State. Sex workers, we've talked about this before. You think it's a good idea?
They put forth a bill, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
There's only like 6 days left in the legislative session, and this is going to be a controversial issue, and it's a multifaceted
issue. But is it a good idea?
I haven't read the bill, and I haven't studied the bill, and I don't know in 6 days that it's going to get the deliberation that it actually requires for any legislator to take a vote.
Let me ask you this. There's sports gambling, upstate casinos, the go-ahead within their casinos, but mobile sports betting is not allowed in New York yet, right? What's the difference here?
The difference is right now you have to go into an upstate casino. We did the casinos in upstate New York, not because it was the greatest industry in the world, but because upstate New York's economy has been suffering for decades. It's a national phenomenon, et cetera. But the casinos have brought thousands and thousands of jobs to upstate New York and invested billions of dollars. So right now, the fact that you have to do your business through an upstate casino doesn't bother me because it was about bringing business to upstate casinos. Now, other gaming interests want to get their piece of the pie, and I understand that. But I am not a tremendous fan of rampant gambling to begin with. You look at the statistics of who winds up winning and losing and their socioeconomic status. So until we study it more and understand it better, the fact that we're channeling that work to the upstate casinos and that business, I think that's a good thing for the state, Alan.
Carl McCall, the comptroller, former comptroller Carl McCall, retiring from the SUNY Board of Trustees at the end of June. Things were not always all that good between the two of you. You ran against them one time, I remember that, and or you were going to. So he's gone. He's going from his chairmanship of the Board of Trustees of SUNY. How are you getting along these days?
Yes, I was in a race against him at one time, many, many years ago. That is politics, though, you know.
Sure.
And I have tremendous respect for him, and he has been a pioneer. He was a state senator. He was one of the first really breakthrough African-American politicians who just has done a phenomenal job. He's had federal service. He did a beautiful job at SUNY. He's a beautiful role model. I can't say enough good things about him, and this state owes him a tremendous debt of gratitude.
Yeah, he once stood up here at WAMC before the podium, you know, and read M.L. King's I Have a Dream speech, which there wasn't a dry eye in the house. What a guy. He's terrific.
What a guy. Beautiful, educated, integrity. I mean, really one of the special public servants.
Talk to me about, we only have a couple of seconds now, but Comptroller DiNapoli is bristling at a bill that would require the state pension fund to divest from fossil fuels. Now, I know that you have always thought we should divest from fossil fuels, but what do you make of DiNapoli, who says, hey, I got no choice. I'm supposed to guarantee a return on the investments we make. I'm a big fan of DiNapoli, as you know, so what do you think of that?
I think my position is that he should divest. I think there are other investments where you can also get a return. I would disagree with your characterization that he bristled. I know the comptroller a long time. Bristling is not an attractive quality.
Who bristles? A porcupine bristles?
Prickliness, a porcupineness. An irascible personality.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't see him bristling. So I'm sure he has a different opinion, but I don't think Tom would ever bristle.
No. No, there were times you and he weren't doing that well together, but now you're pals, right?
But even then he didn't bristle.
He didn't?
No, I don't think he's the type of personality to bristle.
He's not a bristler.
You know, you can bristle. Yeah. I can bristle.
Yeah.
I don't think Tom bristles.
Okay, so one last thing, and that is driver's licenses. The Siena poll says voters oppose granting driver's license to undocumented immigrants. Should the Democrats abandon this legislation?
I think they should have passed it. I think you're down to the 6 days. And when you get to this point, don't expect them to take up any controversial issues they don't have to take up. What they're telling you when they get to this place in the session, 6 days, and they haven't acted, it means they don't want to act. They don't say that, but actions speak louder than words. So marijuana, driver's licenses, I'm going to push today again for surrogacy and ending the gay panic events for the LGBTQ community, the ERA for women's rights. But what they're telling you is they're not prepared to do it. They'll only do what they have to do. Rent they have to do because the law is going to expire. But I'm pushing very hard for them to do some good things that I think they still can do.
But okay, but here's the problem. The problem is we're out of time. You know, I have to put up with the recriminations from DeRosa and from, you know, as a party. You wash your hands of the whole thing. You say, that's not my fault. But I'll be in trouble with those people, and that's the last place in New York State you want to be.
Yeah, Alan, I'm going to bristle now. I don't think that's why you chased me off the phone. I think you use them as a ploy.
Do you?
I think you just want to end the conversation.
Not at all. It says it.
So rather than saying, I don't want to talk to you anymore, I have another guest, I have other things to do, you're boring, I think you blame them for wanting to get me off the phone. That's what I actually think.
You make a good point. It's always it's always great to talk to you, Governor, and I hope you'll keep coming back. It's fun.
Stop bristling. Have a good day.
You too.